Support for this episode comes from T-Mobile. We're a lot more than just baseball fans. We're baseball fanatics. And thanks to T-Mobile, we can stay connected to the game we love with 5G in more places. T-Mobile is your ticket to the game. So whether you're home or away, you're never far from your favorite team with America's largest and fastest 5G network. Don't get caught looking. Switch to T-Mobile, the leader in 5G today. Fastest according to OpenSignal awards based on average speeds in USA 5G experience report, April 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Amazing Avenues Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Sipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos and Thomas Henderson. And happy July 4th, and happy good Mets win.
Yes.
You'd love to see the Yankees losing in Metsian fashion. Though, unfortunately, we've still yet to have one of these games that was as bad for the Yankees as the infamous Luis Castillo game.
Stop.
I do think it's pretty funny that immediately after the game, Cole and Chapman were announced as All-Stars. because
press
they were
next to doubt.
Yeah. Literally immediately after. It was like they're announcing the All-Star game. I'm sure they're having a blast in the locker room celebrating that one right now.
You gave up 10 runs to the worst offense in baseball. Congrats. Maybe because you play in a joke of a home stadium or something.
And Spider Attack merchants.
Well, that's all right, because Nestor Cortez is going to wipe the floor with them, I'm sure. Soft-tossing lefty with some funk.
That's going to be a fun.
All right, so let's start off this week with promote extend trade. And we're going to switch things around a little bit, and someone else is going to do it.
Yeah, so you know how I said I was going to drop video game promote extend trades on you? Get ready for your first promote extend trade based on video games.
All right.
I will say I spent some time looking for like some sort of chuckle-worthy historical misdirect I could go with. Like, this birthday was super important today and it's not 4th of July, but none of them were good enough. So instead I went with, promote extend trade these, three 4th of July adjacent video games. The first, Independence Day. Not the movie. The game for the Sega Saturn / PC / PS1.
Okay.
I didn't think a Sega Saturn was going to start this one.
So full disclosure, I haven't played this one. I think I saw it in an arcade once, but I watched some YouTube videos of it being played, and it's about what you'd expect from a fighter jet game of that era. So you get the picture. Mm-hmm. Option two, Wolfenstein, the new Colossus, which for those of you who aren't aware is an alternate history where the Nazis actually won. And instead of 4th of July being Independence Day, it's changeover day when everyone has to start speaking German. And you know, what's more American than a game about killing Nazis? Final game, Assassin's Creed 3, which is, set in the revolutionary period, where you're playing as both Desmond Miles in the present day and his ancestor Connor, who is half Native American, half British, member of the Assassins fighting for the American Revolution. So promote, extend, trade the three of these, and I have a hot take on the one to trade that I will wait to share.
Well, I enjoyed Assassin's Creed 3, so I'm going to extend that one.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also not, it was kind of fun, running around in revolutionary downtown.
Sure.
And that's definitely a setting that you don't see a lot of colonial America in video games. So I will extend that.
It's a fair take.
I mean,
go ahead. Oh yeah. Cause I was just going to say they nailed the new Wolfenstein games. I love them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the last one was, like, a weird co-op one, but we don't have to talk about that. But, like, the two mainline ones that they recently made are so good, so I'm extending New Colossus, because I had a lot of fun with it.
So I will agree with Thomas and extend New Colossus, but my hot take is that I am hardcore trading Assassin's Creed 3.
Okay.
Because
Lucas, the bed takes machine strikes again.
Yes, I'm back, baby. I never left. So listen, Assassin's Creed 3 on its own, like as a freestanding game, not bad. Not as good as Assassin's Creed 2 or Revelations or Brotherhood. Pretty good game. And like Steve said, a pretty unique setting. But it was at that moment that the Assassin's Creed franchise just like went off a cliff, in my opinion. Because they had established this really interesting story, and it seemed like Assassin's Creed 3 was going to bring it to a satisfying conclusion or something, and they just said, haha, JK, we're going to keep making these every year forever because we can make money, and honestly, fuck annual franchises. So I am trading Assassin's Creed 3.
It's the EA way.
Oh, yes. Oh, now I'm sad about BioWare.
Assassin's Creed did win me back with the last two, though. I actually like them quite a bit.
Yeah, I've heard good things, but I just
they're good, like they are. But I know what you're saying. Like they kind of they jumped the shark for me, and then I took a few years off, and then I got Odyssey. I think Odyssey came before. I always get them mixed up because the names are very similar. But whichever one came out a few years ago in Egypt, and I was all back in, and then I've been back in since because they're actually good. Like they figured out the formula so perfectly that. It's like kind of like Far Cry, where like if I take a few years off of one, I'll just go right back to the new one and I get what I need from it for like 20 hours and then I'm good. You know what I mean? Like I don't
I absolutely get that. My thing is just I play multiplayer games, but I also
I got you. Yeah,
I would much prefer to play a single player game with a really rich story. And unfortunately, when you turn these things into like really serialized installments, the story falls away, I think. Like, the best part of Assassin's Creed to me was, like, the background story. Not the, like, Ezio story was great, obviously, but really I want to know what's happening with Desmond and how that's playing out. And then they just kind of...
Oh, they went in the opposite direction for you then.
Yeah, exactly. That they, like, ignored the overarching story and just focused on, all right, the game has a good story. I'm like, all right, it's just another RPG, though. Like, where's the...
Yeah, I get you. Yes. They really... step all that stuff back because like they I don't really know why, but now
I think they stepped it back because it reached a logical conclusion and they're like, no, we don't want to stop making these actually, so
that's probably true. Yeah,
didn't Desmond die? I'm not remembering. Yeah, all right, so
spoiler alert, he dies at the end of Assassin's Creed 3 and they're like, nah, JK, we're gonna keep this going.
Well, again, that's the EA way, baby.
Mm-hmm. Because everyone keeps buying their sports games and making them oodles of money, which gives them the ability to just run all these other franchises into the ground.
Honestly, the what is the Egyptian one and the Greek one, and I haven't played the Nordic one, but just standalone games in and of themselves, I would play. They seem, you know, they're good. It doesn't need to be Assassin's Creed. It could be, you know, Viking Warrior and
Warrior. Yeah. I mean, it's Assassin's Creed and mechanics. Like, it feels like all the other ones. And they've pretty much perfected that game cycle. And if you feel that fix, you could always go back to it and you get what you need from it and then you're good. Like, it takes me forever to play those games now because whenever I have the itch to play one, I just chip off a little bit because it's an easy game to fall back into.
Yeah, they are big games now, too.
Sorry, I'm too busy spending 300 hours replaying Mass Effect and just sobbing for a solid third of that.
Never played that series.
We will talk about this offline, Steve.
All right, well, other things now we could talk about that are not related to the Mets are the CPBL, KBO, and NPB. And we'll check in first with the Unilions, the Taiwanese team, and there's still no games in Taiwan. And there won't be in the foreseeable future, but good thing that the cases are already starting to go down and they are starting to get things back under control. So that's good. Moving on now to the Korean team, the LG Twins. They went 2-3 and they had a bunch of games canceled because of rain. So they are now 42-32 on the year, which is 3.5 games behind the first place Samsung Lions. And nothing really noteworthy happened, good or bad, this week. So we'll move on now to the Japanese team, the Yakult Swallows, and they went 2-3 with a tie. So they are 38-29-8, which is four games behind the Hanshin Tigers. So they lost half a game between last week and this week. Yamada, he had a strong week. He went 7-for-23 of four home runs. Munetaka Murakami is a little less successful. He went 4-for-24 with two home runs. But still, they are number one and number two in the Central League in home runs. And they are 2-5 in total OPS. So really can't complain about either one of them. And now we will head back over here, and we have some news points to discuss this week regarding the Mets minor leagues. First one of the two is the Futures game. The rosters were released this week, and for anyone who isn't aware of what the Futures game is, it's basically the prospect all-star game. Prospects from different levels, they're selected, and the two teams. In the past, it was split between the international prospects and Team USA, but this year it's going to be American League and National League. But, you know, two teams, two all-star teams play each other. And two Cyclones, Francisco Alvarez and Brett Beatty, were selected. So they're going to be joining top prospects from all over baseball, and it's definitely a fun game. Did either one of you guys get to go in 2013 when it was at Citi Field? Or
I wish.
No. That was fun. That was a fun game. I was there.
Yeah, it had a lot of fun players on it, right?
Yeah, Noah Syndergaard started for the Team USA, and then Rafael Montero started for the international team. I still have the program, and I dug it out, and I was looking back and seeing, I think more fun than the guys that did make it to the majors are just some of the guys that didn't work out. It's definitely a trip down memory lane. There's Miguel Almonte, Jesse Biddle, Garen Caccini.
At the time with the Red Sox, right?
Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah.
Anthony Rinaldo, Andre Rienzo.
Sure.
Henry Arrudia. There's definitely a bunch of names. You know, Obi-Wan. You know, I've not heard that name in a long, long time.
Taiwan Walker I'm seeing on the roster, too, with Syndergaard. And James McCann.
Yeah, there was a few Mets. Nimmo.
Yep.
Quite a few Mets.
They could have had Springer this offseason. Man, she could have reassembled the Futures roster from 2013. Dilson Herrera, Pickles.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And Lindor. Man, it just keeps going here. This is great.
So most teams had two players picked this year. A couple only had one, and then as a result, a couple had three. The Mets system, as we know very well, is pretty bare to begin with, and a lot of players are underperforming. But I think the case could definitely be made that two guys were snubbed, Mark Vientos and or Carlos Cortez. Let's talk about Cortez.
Carlos Cortez.
I know. Well, we'll decide if he was snubbed or not. But through 48 games now, he's hitting .284, .347, .537, or nine homers, which is good for a 135 WRC+. So, technically, in quotation marks, he's an outfielder now. So let's look at the outfielders on the National League team. There's Brennan Davis from the Cubs, Mike Harris and Drew Walters from Atlanta, Helio Ramos from San Francisco, Alec Thomas from Arizona, and Ryan Valade from Colorado. All those guys have more prospect clout than Cortez. And Cortez is, I don't know if I'd say considerably older, but a bit older than all those guys. But he's performing better than basically everybody. Only Harris and Thomas are actually putting up good numbers. The Futures game is kind of more status than performance.
I was just about to say that. This kind of shows that the Futures game is more about, like, who you are in the top 100. And
everyone came out of the woodwork to yell at me when I was complaining about fucking Jason Dominguez being on this roster, which is ludicrous.
Yeah, he has all of like
15. He had literally one game when he was named to the Futures game.
Oh, even more than that, jeez.
Yeah, it was like just when he got named, he like just made his debut. And I get why, because everyone wants to watch him. And also, like, is Cortez a better prospect than any of the dudes you named? No.
No.
You know, he's just having a good season. It's not like an all-star game. Like, it's more like a, this is who you might see in the future game, and you might not see Cortez in the future, no matter how good he's playing right now.
Yes, I am ruling that he was not robbed.
Hmm.
The bit more interesting one now is Vientos. Through 41 games, he's hitting 271, 343, 568 with 12 homers, which is good for a 139 WRC+. The other third basemen that are on team on the National League team are Spencer Torkelson, Brett Beatty, and Nolan Gorman.
Torkelson's playing third? I didn't realize what position he was playing.
He's like first and third. He split.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if he was going to be listed, like where he was going to be listed.
But in 48 games, he's been at high A mostly, and then he just kind of recently got promoted to double A. He has, you know, pretty solid numbers. I would say probably above solid numbers. He has a 170 RC plus in high A and then 128 in double A. Brett Beatty, as we know, he's having a good season. He's hitting 323, 417, 524. In high A, which is good for a 160 RC plus. And then Nolan Gorman now. He's basically played majority of his time in double A, and he has a couple of games in triple A. And he has a 130 RC plus in double A and then a negative 21 in triple A, but that's okay. Vientos is the second youngest of that group. Nolan Gorman is the only one that's younger. Mm-hmm. Vientos does have prospect clout.
He does, yeah.
He is hitting just as well as those guys. So I'm going to rule that Vientos was robbed here.
I wonder if because Beatty made it, like, are they going to put two Mets third base prospects on the roster, you know?
Well, like, technically, either one, I guess, is an outfielder now as well.
Has Vientos actually appeared in the outfield yet?
Yeah, like 2 days ago or something. No, maybe last week. Man. But he did. He played left field.
I have more faith in Beatty's ability to play the outfield, I think, but.
Agreed, yeah.
Yeah, I think they're just doing it, like, to see what it looks like.
I mean, we know Steve is the resident Mark Vientos hype man, so.
I mean, he's been good, especially since the first month. I think if he was this good in the first month, he would have made it, just, like, bullied his way in, but. I think they're just giving it to other people just because the Mets already have a third baseman and he struggled for a bit.
Fair.
What would have sucked is I think Allen would have been a lock if he didn't hurt himself. He would have.
Like, I think that really would have depended on how well he was playing.
I don't know. I think
he would have not allowed a single earned run yet. So.
Would have been having a Jacob deGrom caliber stretch in Brooklyn, you know, and
God, actually think about it. That would be, he probably could, because again, in Brooklyn.
And with how the hitting's been.
I think it would have been a possibility, but I won't go out and say it was a certainty.
That's fair.
And I don't have any problem with Mauricio not making it, but I am the resident Mauricio downer, so also not surprising.
But he's been a little up and down.
Yeah. Quick, trade him for Jose. Trade him and Dom for Jose Barrios before they remember both of them are bad.
I think they're going to trade Mauricio at some point. I just don't know if it'll be midseason or if they want to capitalize on getting someone, like one of their best prospects, trading him for someone who's, you get a full year, you know? Like, I don't know how they view that internally, but I think he's the guy who they trade. Just with how good Beatty's been and how good Alvarez has been, and you're going to trade Allen after Tommy John surgery, that doesn't make any sense. So
yeah, there's no one that's going to be available save Ketel Marte, who the Diamondbacks supposedly aren't going to make available. That is
which is bizarre to me. I don't know why they're doing that. But
yeah, but it's like no one aside from him that it would feasibly be available would be worth Beatty or Alvarez to me.
Agreed. I agree with that.
Yep.
So trade Mauricio for the next tier of guys.
You just got to find the team who thinks Mauricio's better, really.
Yeah.
All right, now our second news item for the week is an update on something that we talked about last week. Minor league advocates, they compared and contrasted how the Phillies compensated their minor league players as opposed to the Mets. And, you know, this is all old news, but it got some traction online, and then some major media outlets started reporting on it. And now, on Saturday morning, yesterday over the weekend, Steve Cohen said, quote, "We are looking into this, and we will have a comprehensive response by late next week. This is news to me, and I want to be thoughtful and not reactive in my actions. We need to examine our treatment of coaches, too." End quote. So, on one hand, great. But on the other hand, come the fuck on.
Okay, you guys go first, and I'll...
I just don't know how he doesn't know. Like I feel like that's something he would have found out by now. But let's see what they do. Like, I'm not gonna say, oh, whatever the Mets do is not enough, because it's entirely possible they just change the whole game and do everything right, and we're celebrating them in a week or 2 weeks whenever they announce the changes. But I don't know how you don't know yet. Like, that's really the thing for me. Like,
yeah, like,
I feel like you should know that by now if you're looking into it or not. Like, it's entirely possible that they've trying to really figure out what to do and how to make it right, and it just came out when they didn't want it to come out, like the situation, the minor league situation with the Mets. We'll see. I feel like I would have known by now, but also that's a lot of projecting me onto a situation that I'm not in, you know?
I mean, so, Cohen does have some experience claiming not to know what's going on in his books, so,
yeah,
you know. But, yeah, I find it hard to believe that this is the first time that he's... I can believe that it's the first time that he's given thought about it, because, you know, do I expect a CEO of a company to know how much staples cost? You know, how much did they buy their company's staples? No, I don't expect that.
It's a banana, Michael. How much could it cost?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not like the price of staplers has been the subject of numerous books and social media exposés and freaking bills introduced to Congress. And to me, I think it's just like... You know, he's done good things. He's gonna be whipping the whole Mets HR staff into shape and all those policies.
I think he handled COVID well with
all those workers that they paid and all that kind of stuff. But to me, honestly, just take the L. You got publicly shamed. Don't say like, oh, I didn't know about this, because that just makes you look dumb. Just say, you know, we are going to address it. You don't need to put the whole, I don't know what's going on.
So I can agree with that last part, but at the risk of being accused of being a billionaire bootlicker or what have you.
Oh, there's a lot of those, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I just love the taste.
I know what you're going to say is not, you're not like Uncle Steve-ing it up on Twitter or whatever. So.
Oh, God.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think your point about, Don't say anything is definitely fair, but
yes, that's my big problem with it.
I have no defense of that. He's just very online. That's how he is. I, on the other hand, I think it's more reasonable than you guys that he wouldn't have known about this, because he does not strike me as an, I mean, this is something we've lauded him for before. He's not an owner that seems particularly interested in meddling in day-to-day operations, right? He's a fan.
It sounds like he's not, yeah.
Right. And from what we know, he hasn't, right? Maybe, look, if there's an expose in 10 years and he's been meddling this whole time, this explanation falls away, right? But he's not Fred Wilpon sitting or Jeff Wilpon sitting in these meetings and probably gleefully laughing about not paying minor leaguers. Like, he comes off much more just like a fan who has several orders of magnitude more money than a normal fan, but a normal fan still who's just kind of casually enjoying the game and also happens to own the team. And whether that's – I don't think that absolves him of all responsibility, right? Like, it's still his – the buck still should stop with him eventually, but I'm also not going to – critique him as if this is – as if he's a Wilpon or as if he's another longstanding MLB owner who has let this issue lie for far too long.
I also think that there's blame to be spread around with the front office. And,
absolutely. And people. If you want to criticize Sandy or yes, because whoever they, else, like, yes, fair. Absolutely.
Like, I think they all deserve blame. Like, yes. Honestly. like Cohen, too, and everyone else, because even, like, let's say that you're right and Cohen isn't very involved and he's just kind of, like, writing the checks and getting out of the way, mm-hmm. then anyone could come to him and be like, hey, we're well behind in this and mm-hmm. we shouldn't be, you know? Like, no, Zach Scott or Sandy or whoever's in the minor leagues or something, and maybe they have and someone else shut it down. Who knows? We have no idea and we probably never will. Know the behind the scenes of who was making these decisions, but just yell at all of them, you know?
No, because, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if literally the only person he talks to ever is Sandy, right?
Mm-hmm. And, I would not be surprised.
And I would also be very unsurprised if Sandy kind of doesn't give a shit about paying minor leaguers.
No, he's old school, part of the establishment.
Exactly, yep. Right?
Yep.
So again, this doesn't absolve Cohen of all responsibility, but I'm willing to give him a chance to make it better. But like I said last week, when I tried to make this point and bungled it a bit, if we reach the off season, or I guess more fair to say, if we reach next season and the situation is the same or still just not adequate at that point, then yeah, it's Cohen's fault.
Honestly, I think Cohen sped up that timeline when he said himself mm-hmm. that in like 2 weeks or whatever, or next week, we're going to have like a better like layout of this.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's put his name on that and mm-hmm. said, we're going to put it out soon.
Yep.
So now that he said that, now he has to, if it's in 2 weeks and it's a bad, like it's not enough or it's very little or it's just a half measure, then we could say something about that, you know, yes. Because he's put himself out in front and saying it'll be handled soon. He shouldn't right. have said that. Like, that was a stupid thing to say, but also he just wants to say stuff on Twitter like he did during the entire Lindor negotiation. Like, I think that's just what we're going to have to deal with as fans.
Yeah.
Like, that's.
I mean, this whole defense of him I've just made has fallen apart now if he doesn't do anything in 2 weeks. Because now yeah, he does know, right?
Yeah.
So if he doesn't do anything, then I'm on board with trashing the dude.
Yep.
The crux of the issue is that the Mets were not providing adequate stipends for housing for the players. So in, you know, a week, whatever it is, I expect that they'll increase the housing stipends and travel stipends at the players. Maybe they'll give them back pay for spring training and extended spring training. But I don't see him rocking the boat and like being the guy, being the baseball maverick that, you know, changes everything. Because at the end of the day, he is, even though he is the richest and maybe and newest and maybe most open to change, he is still a member of the, you know, 29-member old boys club that is Major League Baseball ownership. And he's not going to – I don't think that he's going to be like, oh, yes, we're going to pay all of our minor leaguers $20 an hour starting, you know, whatever. Like, that will – explode yeah, everything.
I also wouldn't be surprised, and I think we've alluded to this idea before on the pod, that there was some wink wink nudge nudge agreement when he bought the team not to blow things up too badly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there was an explicit agreement about the minor leagues in that conversation, but you know, if there was some sort of under the table agreement there, maybe he won't do too much. But of course, he has enough money and he owns the team now. He should just do whatever the hell he wants.
Yep. Well, we will see. I will treat this like I treat the Mets. I expect nothing. And if anything good happens, I will be extremely happy.
Yeah, I expect nothing and I'm still disappointed.
Thanks to T-Mobile for supporting this episode and for keeping baseball fans around the country connected to the game. Because when you're on America's largest and fastest 5G network, you get more than great coverage. You get to stay close to your favorite team, whether you're at home or on the road. In other words, T-Mobile is your ticket to the game. Make the switch to T-Mobile, the leader in 5G today. Fastest according to Open Signal Awards based on average speeds and USA 5G experience report, April 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com. Thanks to T-Mobile for supporting this episode and for keeping baseball fans around the country connected to the game. Because when you're on America's largest and fastest 5G network, you get more than great coverage. You get to stay close to your favorite team, whether you're at home or on the road. In other words, T-Mobile is your ticket to the game. Make the switch to T-Mobile, the leader in 5G today. Fastest according to OpenSignal Awards based on average speeds and USA 5G experience report, April 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
All right, so time to now go over the Mets affiliates and see how everybody has done. And first up are the Syracuse Mets, and they went 2-2 with a rain postponement, and a game that they're going to be playing later tonight after we record. So they are 14-37 on the year, which is only 21 games back, but they are no longer the worst team in minor league baseball. So yay, I guess.
Moving on up.
The Visalia Rawhide are now 13-40. So
they're getting reinforcements. Albert Almora is heading to AAA. Yep. Don't worry.
We're kind of at the point where on that team, Khalil Lee is the only guy worth paying attention to, and then there's a handful of other guys that, you know, might at any given time might be hitting. Right now, it's Brandon Drury and Mason Williams. They're both hitting.
It was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, like it's just not a compelling team in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah,
and even Khalil Lee, he's not bad.
He's still striking out a lot. Right? He's doing everything, but like he's playing and hitting well, but he's striking out a lot, right?
Yeah, this week he hit 250, 231, 417 in four games. So it's not a good week.
Yeah.
But on the year he's hitting 264, 419, 406. Not exciting, but it's
419 is nice. The on base percentage.
The average is basically where his average kind of is. The OBP, it's good. He's at an 18% walk rate. That's great, really. It's considerably higher than, you know, anything he's done elsewhere. Slugging, you know, 416 is not great, but he's always been the guy that had problems translating the raw power into in-game power because of his swing and miss tendencies. But yeah, he is striking out less, so that's a good sign. Maybe, you know, he'll start making more good contact and implementing that in-game power, but like it's not a line that you look at and you're like excited about. It's a positive line, but you don't be like, you know, you don't go like, oh hell yeah, he's OBPing 419.
Yeah. I don't know about you, Steve. I love me some OBP gods.
Well, we'll
One out for my boy Will Toffee that they just traded.
Yeah, we'll talk about him in a second, but
he was hitting like 190.
I know. It's been several years since I was a Will Toffee fan.
All right, so we'll move over to Binghamton now. Not an exciting week for them either. They went 3-2, which is good. It's above 500, and they're also playing later tonight. So currently they are 18-33, which is only 15 and a half games behind the first place Somerset Patriots. Yeah, as mentioned, one guy that we won't be covering is Will Toffee. He got traded to the Giants in exchange for reliever Anthony Banda. So, Lucas,
what did the Rays trade for Banda in the first? Like, he was a big deal at one point.
Yeah, he was. He was a top 100 guy.
I remember seeing. I know that Sam McWilliams was involved in a trade that was involving Banda as well. I saw a thread on Twitter. There was like four current Mets, is something weird, that were involved in, like, all of the trades that Will Toffee has been involved in.
So Banda and Mitch Haniger got traded to Arizona for Gerardo Parra in 2014, which is, I do not remember that. And then
the Diamondbacks traded for Mitch Haniger?
Yeah.
Huh?
They had him as a prospect. He made his debut there. Do you not remember that?
No, I thought they drafted him, though.
No, the Brewers drafted him.
Huh.
Right.
He had a very long, like, minor league career.
The
Yankees, and so hold on. The Yankees got Brandon Drury from Arizona. The Diamondbacks got Steven Souza from the Rays and Taylor Widener from the Yankees. The Rays got Nick Solak from the Yankees and Sam McWilliams and Colin Pasch. And then Banda also got traded to the Rays in that trade from Arizona. So it was a three-team trade. And then he, like, blew out his arm. He got Tommy John, like, right away.
Drury and McWilliams, current and or former Mets-affiliated people.
And the Rays do so much trading. They traded Solak to the Rangers later for what I don't remember what. Like, jeez.
That's their entire model. It's just trading.
Pete Fairbanks. They traded Solak for Fairbanks.
And he's been good. And I mean, that's kind of worked. I guess Solak's been kind of bad this month, but.
Yeah.
It's so weird. Like, they just make trades all the time. It's hard to keep track.
And but, they make like five, they win them by 5% every time. It's incredible.
And like the one rare loss is like Jake Cronenworth is the guy you shouldn't have traded in that one.
Yeah.
Because it would have been fine otherwise, you know? Even Fam is like solid still, but.
Yeah.
Lucas, you want to give Taffy one more send off?
I mean, look, I love OBP gods. He was an OBP god, but striking out 40% of the time, batting under 200 isn't going to work.
After his third year in AAA or
double A. Like, objectively, the bat speed was never great. It was more, I mean, this is the kind of classic issue with minor league OBP, like reading into that. Because a lot of the time it's just a dude that can't actually hit but has plate discipline, so he just doesn't swing at anything. And that was kind of the case with Toffee. So, will I learn anything from this? No. Give me more OBP gods.
But, I mean, it's not the worst thing to bet on, because if the rest of it develops,
yeah,
then it's a good player. It's just sometimes it doesn't, and you get Will Toffee who hits 190 and still is on base all the time. So
is he the last? I'm trying to think of the various crap they got at that deadline.
Oh, I think
they still have Nogasek. They got Bobby Wall along with Toffee for
and
Familia.
LA now. He's a Dodger.
Yeah. No, yeah, I think he just got DFA'd too.
And no, they claimed him off waivers, yeah.
Okay.
Drew Smith that winter. I mean that deadline.
He's probably the best person they got out of that deal. Out of those deals.
Yeah, Drew Smith is still here, of course, right? Yeah.
And he's a contributor.
That's a dark period I try to block out of my mind.
Let's just trade all our relievers for crap.
Makes sense.
That was like every single trade that came in that deadline, I was like, I don't care about any of the things they got back.
Yeah, no, it's like, oh, cool, okay.
Like, Drew Smith is the only dude, and he's solid. Like, he's nothing amazing. Like,
I didn't even have a problem with the theory. Like, hey, we want to try to contend next year. Let's trade for depth that will help us do that in theory. They just didn't even pay down salaries, so they got fuck all.
Brian Ryder, they also got.
Oh, yeah.
He was from the Indians. What did they send the Indians?
Jay Bruce,
right. Eric Hanhold.
Yeah.
What happened to him?
I have no idea.
He's on the Orioles. He's in the Orioles system right now. Mediocre at AAA.
Yeah.
It's just an island where you send misfit minor leaguers.
Mickey Janis giving up like 9 runs in a relief appearance.
Mm-hmm. And then Bautista went in the Cano trade. Just don't do that. Pay down your relievers when you sell, please.
Yes. Well, one guy that might be a hitter in Queens, possibly even later this year, but probably not, is Jake Mangum. And he had a really good week this week. On Tuesday, he went 2-for-4. On Wednesday, he went 2-for-4. Binghamton was rained out on Thursday, but they had a doubleheader on Friday, and he went 2-for-4 in game 1 and 2-for-4 in game 2. And he didn't play on Saturday, but he did have a pinch hit appearance, but he grounded out. But all in all, he was 8-for-18, so that's.
Oh, that's Jake good. Mangum's going to make the majors, isn't he?
Well, unfortunately, all eight of those hits were singles, except for one. One was a double. But. He's hitting right now 269, 300, 425. And the walk rate is not great. It's 3.6%. But Ichiro had a low walk rate too, right? So.
Yeah.
The first time you'll ever hear the rare Jake Mangum Ichiro comp.
That's actually the second time that I've compared the two. So only on this show, folks. But yeah, Mangum, he like straddles a line between actual viable guy and that I don't want to say like sideshow. He's not like a Tebow. He is a legit guy, but like a novelty player, I guess. I don't know.
How's his defense at this point, right? Like this sounds very Albert Almora-y, but probably worse.
I mean, he's when last I checked, he was a very good. Well, I don't want to say very good center fielder.
Because, he's like a solid center fielder, right?
Yeah, yeah. He is a solid.
He's a major league fielder. Caliber center fielder, I should say.
Yes, that's a fair way of putting
this
it.
This is like 80% of Albert Almora.
Well, Albert Almora is not the SEC hit king, so.
I don't know. I don't know why it bothers me so much. Like, Jake Mangum seems like a really cool dude. He ripped the NCAA on his way out the door, which, you know, more power to him.
Mm-hmm.
Something about this dude making the majors is going to annoy me.
I think it's one of those things where it's like everyone else is just, he has such a fan base of support with him because of, you know, where he came from and all of that. So it's kind of that thing. Like, you just, everyone's just like, yeah, Jake Mangum. And you're just like, yeah, but he's not really that great. And the more people are like, yeah, Jake Mangum, you're just like, all right, come on. Like, he's not good. And
he's a true, like, 1950s ass player. Like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He's one of those dudes who would have been like a gamer and would have had like 6 seasons in the majors when he shouldn't have, like, before people knew about stats. Like, you know, he would have been one of those dudes. Like, he just reminds you of such a throwback type of player that you kind of root for him a little bit because that player doesn't exist anymore, and then you remember why they don't exist anymore because, like, you just want to hit home runs now. Like, the game has been optimized past that.
He would have a good high pockets Mangum, you know. He would have a good old-timey nickname.
I mean, I think I'm more annoyed. The thing that might annoy me the most is that his name is Mangum and not Magnum.
I know.
I typed Magnum so many times, and then I would have to look at it.
I'm not going to lie. On draft night, I read it as Magnum. I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, I'm here for this guy. This guy's got an awesome name. And then, like, 2 days later, I realized, wait, it's Mangum? Fuck.
I'm no longer
excited.
I'm sure he's used to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Danny DeVito's line from South Park, Always Sunny, sticks out in my head here. I don't need to say repeat that on the pod, honestly.
I know what you're saying, though.
Well, speaking of guys that are kind of like tweener farmhand prospect dudes, Carlos Cortez added 7 more hits to his line, 2 of which are doubles and 1 is a home run.
He's going to be majors.
Yeah, he is currently hitting 284, 347, 537, with 9 home runs. And he's a quote-unquote outfielder.
I think I've said this before, but, like, McGill and, like, he should, might just play his way into the majors at some point where, like, I'm not the biggest McGill. McGill looks fine. He looks like a major league player. But, like, before this year, when he was pitching really well, I was like, oh yeah, he's going to play his way into a spot because you can't deny that. At some point, the dude deserves a shot, you know, even if you're not a huge fan of his game.
Yep.
And that's going to be something that happens with Cortez. And I'm fine with that. Give anyone you need a shot. Like, you never know what works.
Yeah, if it helps the Mets, whatever. Wagner LaGrange, kind of out of nowhere, he had a really good week this week, 6-for-15 with 2 home runs. He, I don't think, has the ceiling of a major leaguer, but, you know, good for him this week.
He'll hit like 280 and not do much else and stick around for a while.
Yeah, he reminds me of like all of the random sort of outfielders that always felt like they're just around forever back in the day. He's like the Steven Sabol of like 2021, of the late 2020s. Definitely not last year is Mark Vientos, and obviously we know all about his week last week. He was hot as anyone is in baseball. Cooled down a little bit this week, but he wasn't bad or anything. Played in 4 games. He went 5-for-13 with a double, no home runs. It's encouraging to see him hitting, you know, decently. Well, 5-for-13 is more than decently. Good against one of the better pitching teams in the league. Richmond is 4th in the league in the East, AA Northeast, 12 teams. They're 4th in, you know, runs allowed, or should I say runs prevented, whatever. But, you know, some of my doubts were that he's been facing some cruddy pitching lately, and that once they started facing good pitching teams again, he would cool off and, you know, the home runs are not there, but still he's putting bat on ball. He's not striking out. So it's encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
a team that's not looking too encouraging right now is unfortunately the Brooklyn Cyclones. They had a lousy week.
Pitch.
Yeah. 2-for-5 against the Aberdeen Ironbirds. So they are 18-34 on the year, which is 15 games behind the Hudson Valley Renegades. And, you know, it just was not a very fun week. Luke Ritter added to his home run lead, his team-leading 10th home run. He hit a little bit earlier this afternoon, so I think that kind of puts the Cyclones' season in perspective. Luke Ritter is the home run leader.
Look, I'm all aboard the Brett Beatty hype train, and I'm very excited for him to be promoted to AA and all that. I'm still just a little tiny, partially bit concerned that there aren't more homers.
Well, he had a very solid week. He's really one of the only guys that did. He went 9-for-20, but no real power, as you're kind of saying. 8 of those 9 hits were singles, and then the other one was a double.
Yeah.
He walked once, he struck out 3 times, and he played another game in the outfield. And these are away games. It wasn't at Coney Island. But, hey, I mean, you're hitting 9-for-20. That's...
I think you could develop that.
Basically, if Brett Beatty turns into a no-power 500 hitter all of a sudden, I'll take that. Why not?
The first Brett Beatty Ichiro comp. I can't wait for it.
Jesus.
Francisco Alvarez, he was showing some major power at the end of the series against the Blue Claws, but he cooled off. He's just 3-for-16 last week, all singles. 2 walks, 3 strikeouts, so... You know, he didn't look overmatched, nothing like that, but definitely a down week. Ronnie Mauricio had a down week. He only played in 3 games, and then he apparently...
His hand or something
when the Cyclones are playing the doubleheader on Wednesday. But the x-rays were good, so really it's just a matter of some rest and letting the... swelling and whatever go down.
I mean, literally just sit him into, like, how many days is it till the Futures game break now at this point?
Like a week.
Yeah. Next week. You could very easily, like, sit him for most of a week and then he effectively gets 2 weeks off and he should.
That might be
fine.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot more.
And the wrist is one of those things that, like, lingers and sucks.
Yeah. That could wipe your season, a bad wrist.
Oh, yeah. One guy that is having a bad season, and really it's because he's just completely overmatched, is Adrian Hernandez. And I don't understand why he is on the Cyclones at this point. I mean, it was kind of weird that he was assigned there, you know, a couple of weeks ago. Well, at this point, I guess a month or so ago. And you could have seen it like, okay, they're challenging him, but he clearly is
not up to it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this week he went 0-for-15 with no walks and 8 strikeouts. And in the month of June, he's 5-for-47 with no walks and 23 strikeouts. And on the year, he's hitting 133, 153, 169 with 1 home run, 2 walks, and 36 strikeouts in 25 games. So
I'm fine trying, but you got to pull the plug when it's time.
Yeah.
I think we had this conversation in the offseason about how it's easier to challenge pitchers than hitters, right? Like, a pitcher can still get something out of throwing to hitters that are better than him. A hitter's not going to get anything out of being overmatched.
What is he gaining from going, 0-for-15 with 8 strikeouts in a week? Like, he's just getting sad.
Yeah.
And I don't blame him.
You don't want him to be sad.
I would be, too, because if I was trying to become a professional baseball player, and that's the week I had and the month that I had like that, I'd be like, damn, am I really cut out for that, you know? Like,
absolutely.
It's easy to just fall into something like that with a game as hard as baseball. And with a pitcher, you could, like you said, you could learn stuff. But this is just, I don't know, this is just detrimental.
Yeah,
the confidence factor is huge, because then I think you can slip into bad habits that you're just doing what you can to survive as opposed to what's best for you long term. Where again, as a pitcher, like, you could very easily go to your pitcher, yeah, we don't care what happens today. You're going to throw your pitches this percentage of the time. We want you to understand how they work. It's a lot easier to get value out of that because you control the ball. Mm-hmm. Whereas a hitter, you're fundamentally at the mercy of the pitcher to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he's just 20 years old. He just turned 20 this year. So he is one of the youngest players in the league. why, you know, you don't need to push him like this.
Youngest players with a who just missed a whole year of development. Like I don't get it.
I mean,
I do want to say that also makes what Alvarez is doing really impressive.
Absolutely. I mean,
mm-hmm. Where he is the youngest player in the league by like a calendar year. Mm-hmm. And he's not only holding his own, he's good at that level. Like, the batting average is a little low, but whatever, it's batting average, like, I understand. But everything else is fine. Like, he does not look overmatched at all. At that age, it's impressive.
Yep. The only possible reason I could conceptualize, not understand, but because it's a dumb reason, but I could conceptualize the Mets having is that they want to keep getting Adrian Hernandez reps in center field because Alex Ramirez is in center in St. Lucie, but
it just ain't that serious.
Think about that for a second.
It ain't that serious.
The other guys in the corners in St. Lucie, Cole Kless, Joe Suozzi, Brandon McElwain, none of those guys should be getting at bats over Hernandez.
Also, it's the outfield, right? Yeah, it's not like you're moving him off short to play first.
Yeah.
You're moving him from center to left. It's the same thing. There's
also
a reason
you could split them. You could move
them. Right.
If you really
there's a reason when
center.
We play fantasy, we have infield positions, but outfield. It's the outfield.
Like, I'm not saying that, like, center field's harder than the other two, but also you could split it in a week, you know? Like, one guy could play three times, one guy could play four times, and then you switch it. Like, you don't have to put the guy in a box and just play him in the same corner every day. Like, you could get around that if that's really the reason.
Make sure he gets an extra half an hour of fielding before games if you're really that concerned in center. You know, like, it's just, that's the only thing I could say, and it's a stupid, you know.
That's really, like, the teams are bad and they're losing, and I understand, but don't put your prospects in this situation.
No.
Because there's nothing good that comes from stuff like this, and it annoys me.
Mm-hmm. Well, the one team that is not doing bad, we will talk about now, St. Lucie. They did have a bad week, though. They went 2-4. So last week they had a 500 week. This week they had a sub-500 week. So they are at 28-26 on the year. But that's still 3.5 games in first because the rest of Low A, Southeast East, the Daytona Torcucas, the Jupiter Hammerheads, the Palm Beach Cardinals, who are the Reds, Marlins, and Cardinals affiliates, they are all sub-500 teams. So if St. Lucie was in the Low A Southeast West, they would be in fifth place out of sixth. So thank you,
geography.
Sounds
familiar.
Yeah.
Low A Southeast West. What the fuck, man?
Thank God they're in the Southeast East instead of the Southeast West.
That's all I thank God for the Southeast East, you know?
Mm-hmm. As we mentioned before, Alexander Ramirez, he is hitting. He had a 7-game hitting streak snapped today, Sunday, and this week wasn't necessarily his strongest week, but definitely an encouraging first month of professional baseball for him. He was 5-20 this week, and then on the year so far, he is hitting .264, .333,
.422. Big, huge homers.
two homers. 10 stolen bases, 7 walks to 39 strikeouts in 24 games. You know, it's whatever. This is his first month as a professional. I think he's doing better than I, you know, would have thought he would have done.
That's very much someone to keep an eye on, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. I mean, honestly, he is the Mets' top outfield prospect to me. Like, clearly, like I was saying before, it's just not very exciting. Ramirez, he's young, he has the potential, he's doing well. It's exciting. Nothing against
healthy, right?
Huh?
You mean healthy ones?
Like, yeah, well, yeah. I mean, PCA is kind of in limbo right now.
Yeah, he's not playing.
I guess maybe Jalen Palmer is an outfielder now too.
I would put
consider him.
Him over Palmer.
Yeah, Palmer's been disappointing. I was, like, looking at Palmer as someone who's going to blow up this year, and he hasn't, unfortunately.
I mean, he's not doing bad. He had another weird week.
Mm-hmm.
He went 5-14. He drew 4 walks. He struck out only twice. Added 3 more stolen base, so that's 18 on the season. It's a weird the lack of power right now is weird, but the massive amount of walks that all of a sudden he's drawing, and he's not striking out at a terrible rate at this point.
Remember how I said I wasn't going to learn any lessons from Will Toffey?
Oh, no, I'm with you. I'm with you, Lucas, all the way.
Oh, I know. I think, honestly, I think we as a collective whole were higher on Jalen Palmer than anybody, any other sources in Mets prospect world, the Mets prospect sphere.
I think so. I think so. Yeah. Correct.
I mean, there's a lot to like. He's still very young.
If you're an OB, if you're a hyper athletic on base percentage god who can play center field and steal bases, yes.
And at first I thought all the stolen bases was as a consequence of the new rule, but then I went back. It's high A that has the really advantageous rule. At low A, all it is that pitchers are limited to 2 pickoffs attempts. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is all, you know, 18 stolen bases. That's all on his own. He's not.
It's also a 90% success rate.
Yes.
Could you imagine him with the rules?
Yeah.
It'll be on third after every. just put him there. Just let him start at third. It's fine.
I always, like, even watching, like, videos after he was drafted and then seeing him in Kingsport, like, I knew he was athletic and he had some speed, but this is like.
He's fast.
Yeah. This is like unexpected speed, which is good. Definitely like this.
And that's like, I know it's taboo in baseball now, but it's fun. We talk about it a lot, but dudes running like that.
Oh, yeah.
Like when the Mets were doing it for a little bit, they were just letting Jonathan VR be dumb on the base paths and run around. I was all in because it's fun.
Yeah. No, and those are like some of the few rule changes I don't hate. Like get makes steals more viable. And also, like, if you reduce pickoff throws, I bet that would speed up the game, too, right? Like, that might be my...
Yeah.
You know, I'm actually not sure if I had the same opinion in the original pod where we talked about this, but I think the only 2 pickoff throws per plate appearance might be my favorite change of the rules, aside from the bigger bag one, which just makes sense and they should do.
I mean, more than two pickoffs is always... You know, you throw out 1 pickoff, it's like, okay... You throw a 2nd pickoff, you're just like, all right, come on. If a guy throws a 3rd one, that's when he starts getting all the boos.
Everyone just starts, no one likes it. And it slows things down.
2 is a fair cutoff, I think. Definitely. Rest of the team, you know, the rest of the kind of interesting guys on the team, Jose Peroza, Warren Saunders, Brandon McIlwain, Joe Suozzi. Nobody struggled necessarily, but nobody really... You know, stood out, and then obviously St. Louis didn't play too many games this week, so no one really did anything of note there. Looking at the pitching situation, Junior Santos threw a complete game, 6-inning game, which is something you don't see too much.
It was and a lost.
Doubleheader, yeah, doubleheader. So it was 7 innings to begin with, and then St. Louis
gave up like 5 runs.
Yeah, it wasn't great, but he got that CG. That's all that matters. We ranked Santos 15th on our top prospect list. So far, he has a 6.28 ERA in 32 2/3 innings, 42 hits allowed, 20 walks, 34 strikeouts. It's actually oddly almost exactly the same numbers that he put up in Kingsport and exactly the same amount of innings, which is weird. Lucas, you're definitely more of a results-oriented guy, and obviously the results are not really there. And we haven't really seen any big step forwards in any, like, one aspect of his game. You know, like, we're talking about, like, Jalen Palmer. Like, he's cutting down on the strikeouts. Yeah. Like, you could say, regardless of everything else, like, we see some progress. Junior Santos, not so much. But, I think we are overlooking, and it doesn't really come up too much, how young he is.
I was just looking that up, comparative to the league.
Yeah, he is the 3rd youngest pitcher in the low-A Southeast. And honestly, the 2 other guys are well within the margin of error to say he's old measurable. He's 2 days older than the guy that's the Phillies' first-round pick, Mick Abel. And then he's exactly 2 months older than the youngest pitcher, Dax Fulton. And all those guys actually have very similar numbers, which is, again, another weird... coincidence with Santos here. But, you know, we talk about Alvarez gets a handicap because, well, I mean, he's doing well, but if he wasn't doing well, he would get a handicap. And Alex Ramirez and Mark Vientos, like all these guys are super young, so whatever. And we kind of don't really discuss that too much with Santos. Partially, I guess, because he is a pitcher, so he only pitches, a starting pitcher, so only pitches, you know, once every 5 days or so, but it is something to be aware.
I think it matters.
And then the only other pitcher really worth talking about on St. Lucie is JT Ginn. And he was, again, 2 runs over 5 1/3 innings, 4 hits, a walk, 4 strikeouts. You know, the fastball's a little down. Slider wasn't really getting as many whiffs, but this is just micro-analyzing to the point that it doesn't actually matter. I mean,
as long as he can get healthy.
Yes, as long as his arm is still attached and he doesn't hurt anything, that's all that matters. Yep. All good.
I mean, of course, if he starts getting completely blown up, I'm going to change my tune there a little bit. But
right, then we have to start looking and see, like, well, what is going on here?
Yeah, like, is it because of his arm or whatever? But he's fine. All I really want is him to get into next season with a full slate so he could go on from there.
Yep, agreed on that front.
And he's not really bad, even, like,
yeah,
starts. Like, it's not like I said, he's not getting lit up every time he goes out there. He's fine. He's having fine starts. And if he's having fine starts at 75% of what he is, then that's kind of exciting. But that's in the future.
That's, yeah, exactly. He's at 75 working his way back to 100. So it's all good. And now, last but not least, are the FCL Mets, the former GCL Mets, the Florida Complex League Mets. So, in effect, the league, the Florida Complex League, is the former Gulf Coast League, except we have an unnecessary name change here. And I would say, like, oh, yeah, it's to get some more merchandise money, but they still literally have, like, the same – they still have the GCL patches on their uniform, just like the Cyclones still have the New York Penn League uniforms.
That's so bad.
Yeah, and the websites are all still, you know, appropriately – branded as, you know, Eastern League, International League, South Atlantic League, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, but the FCL Mets, these guys are the rawest of the raw players. They're the newest professional baseball guys that were playing the DSL, and now they're making their stateside debut, or high school kids that were drafted, or they're going to be drafted this year. You get some lower-level D2, D3 college guys, you know, probably sprinkled in from the upcoming draft. These are the kind of players that are going to be on the FCL Mets. I'm assuming there's going to be a ton of turnover, because A, there always is, but B, more so than in the past years, you know, baseball executives are still going to be trying to figure out talent distribution, you know, at the complex as opposed to high A, as opposed to low A. So there's going to be lots of guys bumping up and down, but at least for right now, starting out, there's really a bunch of interesting names. Just guys to be aware of: Jace Beck, Robert Colina, Robert Dominguez, Saul Gonzalez, William Lugo, Junior Tillian, Blaine McIntosh, Eduardo Salazar, Yarel Martinez, and our old friend Stanley Consuegra, who I feel like we've been ranking him forever.
Yeah.
Yes.
Why do they have Adrian Hernandez in high A and Stanley Consuegra in the FCL? Like,
I feel like that should be switched. Right.
It's, yeah, exactly. I think that sums everything up. All right, well, I mean, I guess that could be considered Wilponery, that you have two guys, you know, that are very similar and they are multiple levels apart. So
that is- I was going to mention some other potential Wilponery, actually, from this week, which has a wonderful consequence for said Wilponery.
Go ahead and spread the Wilponery with us.
That being, after the wonderful success that was Parler and the collapse of Trump's blogging career, they made a new app called Getter, GETTR, yes.
I don't even know about this one.
Yes.
Like,
and
I have no idea where you're going with
this. Literally, like, have copied the Twitter's code base, it looks like. So that is the core of the Wilponery, I suppose. But the reason I'm bringing this up is for how the internet responded to it. That being, they have filled Getter with Sonic porn.
As you do.
Yes. So yeah, the new right-wing media app is now just littered with various smut from Sonic the Hedgehog.
Incredible.
The internet remains undefeated.
I would ask why there is a lot of Sonic porn, but unfortunately,
Rule 34.
I know, and I know that Sonic fans, for whatever reason, are also really, really strange. And it sucks, because I really like Sonic the Hedgehog, but...
Yeah. I have no further comments on this, on that particular line of questioning. I wish all Will Ponery was, received such a satisfying response, shall we say.
All right, well, I think we could leave it at that. If anyone has any questions, comments, or whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I am at Steve Sipa. Lucas is at elvlahos343. Ken, who's been sitting here this whole time but just had nothing to say, he is at KenLavin91. And Thomas is at SedMetSeason, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast or get your podcast from, rate and review it. And, of course, we thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.
Support for this episode comes from T-Mobile. We're a lot more than just baseball fans. We're baseball fanatics. And thanks to T-Mobile, we can stay connected to the game we love with 5G in more places. T-Mobile is your ticket to the game. So whether you're home or away, you're never far from your favorite team with America's largest and fastest 5G network. Don't get caught looking. Switch to T-Mobile, the leader in 5G today. Fastest according to OpenSignal awards based on average speeds in USA 5G experience report, April 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.